Everyone out there listening, we're speaking with Eric Johnson today on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, strategic technology leader, definitely a Microsoft guy, I hope. in the oil and gas industry at Atlas. Oil and gas, you know, been around for a while.
It has.
You guys aren't doing batteries yet, are you?
So we are actually owned by a large conglomerate. Well, I say large. Founded by a man named Sam Simon. And so he owns a holding company, which owns several other holding companies. And so ours is specifically focused on oil and gas. But one of the holding companies is looking into kind of alternative power solutions, right? I'm of the belief oil and gas has got a long way to run.
Me too.
But Sam is very much I want to make a company that exists for my great grandchildren. And yes. So if that's the game, I need to be prepared for that.
Legacy. What's up with oil and gas? What's up with your IT career in oil and gas? You were at Love's.
Mm-hmm.
That was, let's go back in time.
Yeah.
What was your first computer?
It was an AT&T based on an x86 processor. So that was at the time my aunt worked at AT&T. And so it was an actual AT&T branded personal computer.
That's crazy.
I don't know how long they were in the PC business. I get the feeling not very long. I don't even remember what the chipset was, but yeah, then I remember 286, 386, 486DX. At one point, I think I had one that had the turbo button on it.
Yes.
Right. So you could, that way you could, if you had the legacy games that were only designed for the 386, because they were just off clock speed. And so if you didn't throttle it back, right, the game ran so unbelievably fast, you couldn't play it.
So you had to unclick the turbo button.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really a turbo button. It was unclick the turbo button. I used to remember having to
it was the slow button. Yeah.
Auto exec bat and move memory around to get games to play. And then, Windows wouldn't load. So you'd have to go back in and moving around again to load Windows. You had to be CD backslash, whatever, win.exe. You remember that.
Yeah. And the multiple floppy drives, right? Where you would get things on 5 1/4 floppy drive, actual floppy drives.
Yeah. If you had both. Both, that'd be weird. It was cool. It was a lot of fun.
It was.
So how'd you end up in technology?
I have always liked technology. So I didn't know I liked technology. My grandfather was a general contractor. And so always kind of liked doing things and understanding how things work and why did this work. And so I think that was probably my first realization that I liked understanding things. And
I wonder
so
if a lot of IT guys fix their own house. Do a lot of IT guys, you think, fix their own stuff?
I think they do. I think there's a certain amount of, there's still that curiosity for a lot of IT guys.
I get frustrated with a lot of contractors. I have a horrible, horrible batting average with picking good contractors. And then I just end up doing it myself. I'm like, but I don't feel like I have the time, So I'm like, I could do better with my time rather than, I don't know, drywalling all of this and framing this out and stuff. And then three contractors later, after they all fail or something happens or they don't show up to work or whatever, I just have a horrible contracting batting average in Connecticut. Maine was much better. But so shout out to Maine, I guess, for, I don't know, general contractors or regular electricians and electricians and handymen and drywall people. Connecticut, horrible, man. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, Houston's got quite the abundant supply of contractors, but I think, and some of that I think is a function of, it hurricanes, floods. So I think there's always a steady stream of work. So I don't think you can last very long in Houston. I think word gets out pretty quick.
Well, it's Texas too. So, I mean.
Yes. Yeah, we're just coming off in Houston a pretty epic rainstorm for the last couple of days. So yeah, it's been messy.
Okay, so anyways, you always loved technology, but it wasn't a thing back then. It wasn't really a thing. It was just like I was the one step above the AV guy in the high school that would roll in the the AV equipment or something like that. How did you end up actually in technology? Did you go to school or anything?
So I thought. I don't know why I thought. I guess I liked numbers and figuring things out. So I thought I wanted to be an accountant.
Why is that so common? That's becoming more. I'm hearing that answer more and more. I'm hearing I wanted to become an accountant. And then I was like, oh, that was a joke. But I was playing on the computers. And then I just kind of flew into this role. But anyways, keep going.
Yeah. So went to University of Iowa. Thought I wanted to be an accountant. They made everybody. So I have a degree in MIS, which Management Information Systems, which is kind of the precursor to a lot of that stuff. So took that class and then realized I like computers and this is a job that will pay me to, in my mind, pay me to play.
Mm-hmm.
So changed majors pretty quickly, decided accounting was not for me. Computers were where it was at. got a summer job working the help desk at the University of Iowa. This was back when computer labs were a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ended up being kind of the student manager of the help desk at the business school. And so just all of the, you know, Windows NT 4, it was back in that era, little work groups.
Yeah. What were the tickets that came in? What did you do back then on the help desk?
Primarily either password resets. A lot of students needed help. I don't understand how Excel works. You know,
so what do you mean? What do you mean? I don't understand how Excel works. Like, how do you type in a cell?
Yeah. Like how do I make these two cells add together? I mean, this was 98. And so, you know, I don't think Excel wasn't a thing that was taught in high school, right?
We still have that problem. I still don't think it's a thing taught in high school, because I'm realizing this, that we need like a school of hard knocks, like a common sense type of school. Like I would open up a school that was like the school of common sense, like things you need to know how to do. I don't know if kids coming out of high school know how to send a calendar in.
Based on the last couple of days, I would agree with you. I would think that
it's weird. Or, no, but like I'll find kids like they don't know how to do PowerPoint, or they don't know how to use Excel. They won't, you know, they'll be like, yeah, I think I could, you know, enter in 100 addresses and names and numbers. I was like, it's easy. You just, what do you mean? You guys figure everything else out. You're holding a smartphone in your hand. You know how to like change all your settings on Instagram and link it through API with, you know, a Zapier thing to do this or something like that. Like, what do you mean you can't figure out Excel or PowerPoint? You just click around.
Yeah. I think it's just, they just don't want to. Right. They want to figure out Instagram. They need to figure out Instagram because that's where their friends are. So I think there's just a little bit of lack of that. And then I would say a large percentage of the tickets. So I was in college when Napster was a thing. So the never ending number of PCs needed to be reformatted, rebooted. So we actually used a program called Ghost that would do like a wake on boot off the 3.5 and download an image across the network. And so we re-imaged all 200 PCs at that time. All 200 PCs every week, because just the viruses that came in, you know, and this was pre Windows Defender. There was no IPSs. There weren't any IDSs, right? We just didn't have the level of control. I mean, some of these machines ran Windows ME, Windows 2000. So just almost no ability to control those machines. So that was the solution, was just blow away every week.
Attention, all of my IT leaders who don't know a lot about telecom. Many of you are still managing a pile of junk and you've inherited a telecom silo. I call it a telecom time bomb. Many of us are ignoring it because the enormity of tasks surrounding a phone system replacement is overwhelming, and there's a constant barrage of direct sales reps trying to get you into a new UCaaS system today. And the whole process ends up being filled with an unforeseen comedy of errors. However, for those of you tackling such a task, you must answer, number one, are you going to go Microsoft Teams, or are you going to do something else? If it is Teams, then there's only three ways to do it, and the worst way is by just clicking the button and paying that expensive voice-enabling Teams button in your CSP's portal or asking them to do it for you. Okay, so you're not 100% sold on Teams yet because your company has a unique group of end users. Good for you for caring. Then you may be wondering, and you need to answer all of these questions. Which platforms and interfaces have easy to self-manage portals, GUIs, so that you can make moves, ads, and changes on the fly? Which platforms are the most upgradable and have functioning APIs? Who will truly interoperate with your systems? Who's going to give you free equipment and headsets, of course, and be the most cost-effective? Who's going to support your team the best with fast technical support in minutes, not days? And who's going to meet your compliancy requirements now and in the future with flexible user licensing? How about network preparation, ensuring quality of service and properly layering voice applications? How do you confidently ensure a smooth cutover and avoid going in with your fingers crossed? How do you negotiate all the legal ramifications, FCC regulated SLAs that affect your terms and conditions? Things like elasticity clauses and out of contracts if they fail to deliver. How do you know what your end users are thinking, and how to deal with explaining technical to people 1,000 times that don't know how to do a transfer? And even if you have all this down, what do you do if you have limited time to research, evaluate, and confidently plan a network communications upgrade that will surely impress your key stakeholders with return on investment, CapEx, OpEx, all of this stuff? Evaluate, and where do you get started in an ocean of vendors? Which provider mix is going to best fit your company's culture versus just asking your peers who they use, or shopping VoIP.com, or Googling who's the best, and then you've got all kinds of people showing up in your inbox? This is why this is the classic put-off project, where no one wants to take on the planning from start to finish, everything from auditing bills to surveying staff, researching providers, sifting through information, meeting with vendors, requesting proposals, ensuring all the effective transition without outages, and managing all of the negative Nancy naysayers who are surely going to complain about the new phone system. Let me and my special team of telecom nerds give you all of the rollout maps, RFP grids, and hold you by the hand for free, and even pit providers against them and give you all of the data information on what the lowest pricing has ever been with benchmark level pricing. Everything from seeing how far you can throw those
those old phone systems to every detail you need surrounding Microsoft Teams integrations or all of the best UCaaS providers with custom and in and out of the box APIs. Also, some of you are dealing with who's the best fit contact center software providers for your unique group of end users and agents and staff. How can you leverage AI software to drastically increase agent efficiency? And let's not forget about workforce management tools to ensure proper staffing, all while avoiding annoying meetings and sales reps telling you it's the end of the month, President's Day specials. All you need to do is email telecom@popularit.net and we will give you all of the information, everything you need, and hold you by the hand for free. And if you like the information, great, do whatever you want with it. And if not, you can tell us to go pound sand.
So yeah, what kind of virus? So every week you'd have a bunch of viruses and just like, screw it, reformat everything.
Yep, that was the solution.
Remember those days? Screw it. Just format the hard drive and, you know, make a new partition or something like that.
Yeah, we had a little hidden partition. And so Ghost would either pull across the network or it would just try and reload off the hidden partition, right? The canned image that the University of Iowa had decided on.
So a weekly formatting of every, I wonder how many other people did that. You think that was common practice?
I do. And the technology, I just don't think was really there to stop a lot of that stuff. Right. Yeah. I mean, you know,
I never really thought of that.
And you had to have, most people had to have, I don't think we had admin accounts. You know, domain controllers weren't really a thing, Microsoft Active Directory. So our Windows PCs were just logged into the network at all times, right? With a user account that wasn't anyone's personal user account.
You're just moving your mouse around. That's so true.
Yeah, screensaver would go away and then...
You're bringing back all these memories now. They're like repressed or something. I think they were repressed.
Zip drives and burnable CDs and... It was an interesting time.
Okay, so what is it? What's your job? What's your daily job look like right now?
Yeah, so daily job right now is I have responsibility for all of IT at Atlas. So that's everything from all of our infrastructure, which we're in a bit of a hybrid right now, so a bit of on-prem, a bit of cloud, to supporting our enterprise applications. So we are actually in the middle of a fairly substantial project. We are upgrading our existing ERP solution. So we have a fuel dispatch business, a logistics business. Mm-hmm. And so the company was originally founded by a man named Sam Simon. And so Sam got his start because he took out a loan and bought a truck, the big trucks you see driving down the road that deliver gasoline.
Yep.
And so we have a business that if you own a gas station and you need some gas, you can call us and we will go get gas for you in the big truck and drop it off on the tanks in the ground.
Sure.
So that business is undergoing an ERP upgrade. And then we also have a supply and marketing organization, which is the kind of the oil and gas term for traders. So we have a fairly sizable trading organization. And that business is undergoing an ERP implementation. And then in the oil and gas business, what's known as an ETRM or CTRM implementation, which is energy trading and risk management or commodity trading and risk management. And so that's the software that keeps track of all of our trades. So how much did we buy? Who did we sell it to? What's the anticipated profit? You know, how much does it cost us to move? At least for us, we do some financial deals to hedge some of our risk, right? So there's always this risk of I buy it today, a dollar, I move it down the pipeline and I'm going to sell it to you for $2. But what if the market moves on me, right? And all of a sudden, you know, that trade is no longer financially viable. So it's also the system that keeps track of all of our hedges. So we basically will, it's insurance, right? We pay insurance. We take out a hedge and say, hey, if this bad thing happens, this financial instrument is then in the money and that offsets any potential loss on the sale down the pipeline a week from now.
I get it. It's like me buying my oil for a year in advance or something. I may do well, I may not do well.
Yep. And so we take
from
out
a very simple, from a very simpleton standpoint, you oil and gas guys would probably just be making fun of me. No, it's much more complicated than that. Yes.
And that's basically it.
Okay. So that's those are quite the projects. Any words of advice for the ERP implementation people are going through that? I don't know. Many would describe it as, you know, paper cuts and lemon juice type of thing, you know, herding cats to a new platform and these type of things.
Yeah, I think, you know, on the business side, we have a tremendous amount of business buy-in. Our existing legacy systems really cause the business pain, so much pain. They actually are looking to expand into new markets. And the senior leadership team has put the brakes on that and said, no, we are not going to expand into new markets. The current system doesn't do what you need it to do today. There's no way we're going to expand into new markets with a system that doesn't do what you do today, let alone do what you need it to do tomorrow. So business buy-in for me has always been huge, right? Getting that true support, that engagement, pretty rigorous project management. I wouldn't say I micromanage, but we have a pretty strong set of gate and phases. So it's very, you know, these are the 10 things that have to happen before we move into the next phase. And so we will meet, discuss those 10 things. Do we have them done? You know, we may only have 9 done and we may decide to move to the next phase, but that's a decision that's made amongst myself and the senior business leadership team. So we can say, hey, here's, you know, I don't want to stop the project, but if we move forward, here is the potential consequence of moving forward without this thing defined. We have brought in consultants for most of the implementations, really just around the project management support. A lot of that's a function of, I have a small team. It's 8, including myself. And we have almost 400 employees.
8 to 400. That's good. You're double the average. We did a survey a couple of years back and I surveyed mid-market IT. So companies that would have IT directors, VP of IT, maybe a CTO, maybe a CIO. So companies, 200 employees, upwards of 10,000, but I think the survey probably hit 2,000 and under. The average end user ratio to IT staff was 1 to 100. So you're doing 1 to 50. That's much better. That means you guys value technology. That means your executives value technology. The correlation I can see to whether a company values technology or does not, anything under that 1 to 100 ratio, I personally would say they value technology more. 1 to 50 is great. But my argument always to executives around the world and the globe is, have you ever been to a class in college where you were one person in the class of a professor and it was 100 students in the class? What are the chances of that, any of the students getting any type of personalized support or being very successful? So 1 to 50 is good. Even less would be better. You know, at least 1 to 50, there's a chance that your professor knows who you are. But 1 to 100, it's, you know, it starts to get watered down a lot. So that's really cool. Would you say that, in general, stereotyping your industry, would you say that the oil and gas industry tends to be more old school or behind the times or ahead of the curve when it comes to technology?
So I think, and I get to see both sides of it, I think it depends on the kind of a segment inside the oil and gas business. So if you look at our transportation and logistics business, I think they value technology less.
Really?
For them, okay. Just about. It's because it's just moving product, right? I pick a thing up here, I put it over here.
I think transportation and logistics, I think the Amazon effect, and I know so many people in transportation and logistics, and I know so much is going on right now at this point, maybe in the last year, that they've really had to upgrade. Really, they've been investing more in technology as of recent than mainly due to the, not only the Amazon effect, but the COVID effect and numerous different things like that, that really made a big change in the atmosphere, but keep going.
Yeah. So I think on the trading side, technology is front and center of that business. We have two or three young guys who do nothing but write R and Python, and they're scraping websites. And because that really is a business based on speed, right? If you can get a tenth of a penny cheaper than the other guy because you're faster to make the deal, you know, we move.
I would say you guys are ahead. Me personally, I would say you guys are ahead of the curve, just based on talking with you and the things that you've said, and knowing some of the other oil and gas. I would say that you guys are well ahead. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. So I will say though that on the transportation side, to your point, I do see that moving. I think they're moving to be more on the forefront of technology. I think some of that is just it's a generational shift.
Yes.
You know, people were fine with writing basically a bill of lading, right? So you go pick up gas and you would literally just get a piece of paper that says, you know, fill loaded 5,000 gallons of diesel at this price at this location.
With a carbon copy. With a carbon copy. A white, a yellow carbon copy.
Yeah, you would write your ID number on there and say, this is what I picked up. I think there's a generational shift going on in the oil and gas business, right? It's the oil and gas business has been graying for a while. It definitely took a hit you know, where we didn't see a lot of new people entering the business. And so that has really picked up, I would say, over the last 5 to 10 years with the increase in the price of oil. And so now I think generationally people are, to your point, it's the Amazon effect. It's what do you mean I can't go online and just tell you I need gasoline? I have to like call somebody, I have to call a dispatcher and they have to route it. Like I don't want to do all that. I just want to be able to go to your portal and say,
I have to manually call you with my credit card number. I have to get you to do a, interesting. Yeah.
So I think as that, as the generations have shifted, the expectation, and I think a lot of it is the consumerization of technology, right? So we are being, to your point, we are being pushed by Amazon because, you know, I can go online on Amazon and buy anything and it shows up, assuming it's Prime today, maybe tomorrow. So you're going, I don't want to call one of your dispatchers. What do you mean I have to call customer support?
One of the wildest things that we've seen happen. I mean, think about that. Think about 286 days compared to now. Do you have any kids?
Yeah. The change is amazing.
Do you have any kids?
I do. I have a six and a four. It's 4.5.
Okay. So I have some kids that age too. I have a 5-year-old and a 9-year-old, but I also have a 20-year-old and a whole slew of kids in between that. But when I think about, it just still blows my mind that they grew up in an age of like, yeah, this is just it. Of course. Like, what do you mean you can't order something on Amazon? Like that was so, I mean, you had an AT&T computer. It just still blows my mind. We used to go, I remember going to the, I mean, when I just think back about going to the, whatever, a grocery store with my mom or whatever it was back in the day. You used to go to the mall and people had crazy credit card books with like 20 credit cards in it. And they used to slide the credit card thing back and forth. And it was a bunch of paper receipts. And it was like, when I start to think about the operations nightmare of that process and how many people had to get just the paper alone. And if you lost a piece of paper, I mean, who knows what that meant? Did that mean we just lost the charge? I don't know. You know, like when you think about how you had to keep track of everything, it's kind of wild. The bank book, where you used to write the bank book, or they would take your little bank book and put it in a little print machine. It would tell you your new balance. Now you just go on your phone. You're like, oh, that's my balance. Well, how much money do I have in my bank account? You wouldn't do that back in the day. You'd be crazy. So are we losing, probably lose some money nowadays for that, for not having been this, I don't know. It's just, my mind goes off on tangents.
Yeah, no, I couldn't tell you the last time I personally balanced a checkbook.
Right? Yeah, you were crazy if you didn't do that back in the day.
Yeah. And now I don't think anybody balances checkbooks. I'm sure there are some people.
Every now and then I have to write a check. I'm like, where are they? I'm like, honey, where are the checks? Do we have any checks? Do you have a check? What do you mean you'll take a check? Who takes a check? It's a piece of paper you write on. Like, that's worth some. People are still like, yeah, I'll take a check. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah, can I just sell you or Venmo you? Or I mean,
Cash App, you know, Payoneer, you know, some, what, how many other apps do we have that we need to do? Can I Wise it to you? You know?
Yeah, there's got to be a better way, but I'm with you. Still amazes me every once in a while I have to write a check.
What's the end game for IT guys? Sail off into the sunset? Everything's on autopilot? Sit back, kick up? I don't know.
I don't, I mean, I.
No one knows. Yeah,
it's so hard to predict the future. You know, 20 years ago when I first started, I think it was clear, right? There was a, you know, the organization just kind of got bigger. There was a, I don't know that it was a straightforward, but there was a path to the top, to CIO. It's interesting to see. I mean, obviously people will need to continue to manage the bots. Mm-hmm. And so I think there will always be this supporting role for technology, but to your point, you know, the rise of citizen developers, which I still have not fully seen come to fruition. We've looked at some software that has promised, you know, it's development without the involvement of IT.
Really?
And I've yet to really see any of that. I would say it's gotten kind of visual basic-ish, but really any kind of complex operations still end up at, you know, if you've got a table and, you know, you've set up a connection to the app, right? And a person wants to just read from that table and move some columns around. Yeah, that's doable. You know, like the Power BI stuff, but as soon as you get into anything complicated, I have yet to see a true developer who is a true business user who is able to write, you know, or make those apps do what they need it to do. So I think there will always be this need for IT guys to just be able to manage the, even with cloud. I mean, we have a resource who manages our cloud infrastructure, right? His job is less complicated as we move more and more. Well, I don't know if it's less complicated. It's
Depends on if you're reading, depends on if you're reading Microsoft Azure hieroglyphics, different line items that come through on your bill or not, or is it AWS? That might be easier.
We're Azure, but yeah. So I think you'll continue to see people move up in the value chain, for lack of a better term, right? Where instead of worrying about disk space and RAM, you know, and do we have enough? But in the end, we are responsible for our tenants inside Azure, right? We're responsible for making sure that they're not running when they don't need to be running. They are running, all of those things.
Cost containment.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, for us, a lot of cost containment. You know, we're still a relatively small organization with plans to grow, but the oil and gas trading business, and even to some extent the logistics business, is a pretty cash intensive business. It requires a lot of capital, right? Because you buy and then you sell, but there's a gap in the middle there where we're floating those costs.
Switching gears, what's your favorite IT story or biggest nightmare? You got any good IT stories? One time we had someone that HR tried to charge a bunch of tablets, and the idea was, I'm going to drill a bunch of holes in these shoe boxes, and we're going to put all these tablets in the shoe boxes, and the charging cords are going to go through little holes in the shoe box, and then we wake up the next day and half the building burned down. I shouldn't laugh at that. It is kind of like, you know, things overheat, by the way. It's got to... What's the biggest nightmare story? Or we decided to plug in this new, I remember there was another one. It was a telecom company I worked for back in the day, and they were doing a router upgrade on like an edge router or something. And they thought they were just doing a router upgrade on just that one like router. And it set some like catastrophic series of events that like went from one router to the next all through the entire network. And then, so the entire North American network shut down, like, I don't know how many feet are in a mile, like whatever. It's like five, whatever it was like 40,000 customers, like blip, just down, just went down, you know. I remember talking with like the CTO, and he was like, yeah, that was the worst day of my life. He was like, but we learned a lesson. I was like,
yeah, I think for me, it's, we had somebody who brought in a device. And their device, they had, rather than DHCP, had it set to a hard-coded IP. And that IP address was the IP address of our DHCP server. Mm. And we just had IP conflicts. And of course, you know, nobody knows, right? IT can't figure it out. All of a sudden, nobody's leases are getting renewed because they are going to this other device, right? That is trying to, people are asking for IP addresses. And it's saying, I'm not a DHCP server. I don't know what you're doing here. Go away.
We had that happen. I had that happen with another guy with a smart TV. Yeah. They could not find the device forever. They're like, yeah. And then eventually someone thought, like, is it possible that maybe one of these devices is like, anyways, keep going. So how'd you first figure it out?
So we finally figured out because it happened, and then it stopped happening when they left. Because they took the device with them, right? Yeah. And so it just stopped. That's incredibly odd. And then it started the next day again. And I was like, okay, this has got to be a thing, right? Like, so we're trying to figure out, do we have a virtual machine that's turning on? Is there a batch job? And no, it was just, I mean, it was the incredibly simple answer of somebody kept bringing a device from home that had an hard-coded IP address. That probably worked great at their house. And so I think it was a business user who thought they knew a lot about technology, and or maybe they had their home network set up by somebody else. And so this thing had a fixed IP, and it just kept colliding with ours. And so we finally... on about day three, figured out, like, this is weird. It happens roughly about 8:30 in the morning every morning, right? But it was looking at batch jobs, just trying to, like, what is going on in the IT side? And the answer was, it wasn't an IT function. It wasn't an IT issue.
That's actually pretty cool. How did you find the person? Did you eventually walk to be like, shut that off?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, we had a good sense of, you know, because I think everyone... as those business users who are fairly logically savvy. And it was like, it's got to be one of these guys. It has to be one of these guys. And so it was like, hey, can you unplug that real quick? And then the network came back to life. And it was like, can you plug it back in one more time just real quick? And the network cratered out. And it was like, that is.
How long did it take?
Almost 3 days.
Oh, gosh.
It's a simple answer, right? But when you're in it.
Not really. I mean, it's kind of like a needle in the haystack type of thing. That's excellent. Advice for people, advice for youngsters out there in the world coming up in IT, anything?
Yeah, I think curiosity. to me is the thing that we really look for when we're hiring, when we're looking at interns, or even just hiring experienced hires. The world changes so fast in IT that if you are not up to date on technology, as well as trends in the industry and inside IT, I think it's incredibly easy to get left behind, you know, and just to see that value that you have to the organization diminish. You know, it would be great if organizations had a training plan and said, you know, here's the plan to keep Phil up to date, right? This week he's going to take this class and next week he's going to take this class. I think it's a great desire. It just doesn't seem to happen, right? You know, as Microsoft releases new versions of SharePoint, there's got to be, if you're the SharePoint person, there's got to be that curiosity of like, why did they do this? And what did they do? And how does this work now? And what does this change for the business? What does this change for IT? So to me, that's...
How do you find that? How do you find that person? Can you teach it?
I don't know if you can teach it. I think a bit of that curiosity is built in. And so I tend to ask a lot of questions that are maybe not specific to IT, but about just their curiosity life,
I wanna
right?
Know. Yeah.
What was the last learned? What was the last interesting article you read? Why did you find it interesting? Some of those kind of questions, because I think, I mean, there are curious people everywhere in every part of the organization. And for me, those are the people that you see tend to rise to leadership positions, right? It's this never ending, I don't understand. Why does that do that? Can you explain this to me? What happens if I do this? And I think to me, it's curiosity.
Let's go through some of those questions real quick. Okay. So what was the last article you read? What else do you have?
And then for me, a lot of it's why, you know, cause some people say, oh, I read the Wall Street Journal every day. That could be an indicator of curiosity, but not always. Right. So why, you know, how is that relevant to your life, business, right? Because it may be, oh, I read an article in this camping magazine and it sparked my curiosity around this thing. So kind of articles, why, how, or did you put any of it into practice? Because to me, it's not just enough to be curious, but you've got to look to then take that curiosity and do something with it. Yeah. I ask questions about, you know, what was the last big issue you had at work? You know, give me an example of a problem you solved or a problem you had. How did you solve it? You know, and I personally like to see and hire people who are willing to spend some time figuring it out, right? If the answer is, I had this problem and then I called my buddy because he's this guy and so he fixed it. It's great that you got the problem solved, but I don't think you as a person grew from having the problem.
Yes, yes.
Your buddy is now smarter, but I'm not sure you grew. To me, that doesn't show me a ton of curiosity.
Yeah, no, I got it. Like I searched YouTube, I figured out how to reset this and do this. Like, my dad's old massive Xerox laser printer that he got given to him somehow, that's the size of a washing machine that sits on his desk that he loves to have. And I had to replace some weird part on it. So it was like the Xerox guy on YouTube, you know? And then like, I was like, okay. And I'm like pulling the front of the machine off and like, okay, pull this thing out. Okay, hit this little switch, move over here, put this thing in here. And then like I replaced him. He's like, you're a genius. Like, how do you do that? I'm like, I just Googled it. And then it took me to YouTube.
YouTube. They are amazing.
Fortinet guy, by the way. Yeah. Anyways, Fortinet guy, someday we will meet somehow and we should trade podcasts or something like that, because people keep talking about Fortinet guy, but he's just the Fortinet dude. Like, if you need to make some, you need to know something about Fortinet, you know, you Fortinet guy on YouTube. It has been a pleasure having you on the show. Any final words of wisdom or anything for listeners out there or anyone in IT?
You know, really, I think it's, to me, I have always tried to be humble and hungry. I think those are the keys to a successful career. I think, and honestly, probably it doesn't matter the industry, doesn't matter the profession, but you know, the ability to say, I don't know, but I will go figure it out, I think is probably one of the most important outlooks on life that if you want to succeed, you can have.
Yes. Well, Eric, thank you so much for being on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Was truly a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Thank you.